But a really interesting article on the Sports Illustrated website, Peter King's website, MMQB, written by a guy who used to cover the Buffalo Bills way back when. Rich Deitch is a writer, reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. He writes the extremely popular Media Circus column on SI.com every week, and he joins us on the line right now. Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, John. It's been a long time since we saw each other in person, but I'm a UB graduate and always have great fondness for Buffalo. Probably my second favorite city behind New York.
Yeah, you covered the team while you were here, the Bills, for Associated Press, I believe, right?
Well, I was strung for them a little bit, but okay. It was a big weekly up there, Metro Community News. I don't even know if it still exists.
Yeah.
But during the, I was there during the glory days of Kelly, Paul, Andre Reed. It was, for being like 20, 21, 20 years old there covering that team, and such a great team, was just an unbelievable ride.
Yeah. I got to tell you, and this is going to, this is a compliment, but Monday mornings, part of my annual or weekly Monday ritual is to read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback, and over the last 6 months or so to read your Media Circus, which deals with much more than the NFL. It really is a must reading for me, and I really appreciate the work that goes into that, Rich.
I appreciate it. A very big difference of salary structure between me and Peter King, but I appreciate that, John.
Yeah, but it is good, and the folks who have not been exposed to it, the idea is you just kind of compile everything about sports media in a weekly snapshot, right, once a week.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the idea is, and I kind of stole it from King, it's really to do multiple items on multiple different things when it comes to the sports media. So it can be anything from examining, let's say, ESPN's NBA Countdown, to giving a sense of what the World Cup ratings are, to just my own take on something I see online, to something I see on television, listen to on the radio. It's, you know, there's so much media basically being consumed in this country that, you know, it's pretty much impossible to cover all of sports media. But the idea is basically to give people a real snapshot of what is currently going on in the sports media with the same kind of construct that Peter King does in his Monday Morning Quarterback.
And another reason why I love your Media Circus column every week is that you deal with some of the best non-sports pieces of journalism that are out that week. I can't tell you how many times you've directed me to some article or some sort of story that I never would have come across on my own.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, one of my favorite things in the world to do is read. I'm reading all the time, whether it's the New York Times, The Economist, or The Atlantic. You know, I'm a pretty voracious reader. It's kind of one of the things I love to do. And that's what's great about Twitter, is that now that provides you with your own distribution engine to pass along stuff. And pretty much everything that I pass along during the week, I'll go back on Saturday night or Sunday morning, take a look at that, and that's how I sort of compile what I think is the best journalism of the week. The one thing that's very clear, John, is that, especially with the web today, there's probably never been a better time for good journalism. Even as newspapers fold and the industry is in trouble, there's really a lot of good work being done across the country.
Rich Deitch is our guest. He is a media reporter, a writer-reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. You also go to great lengths to poke fun and maybe even more than poke fun at Skip Bayless and some of the guys at ESPN. I have to admit, I enjoy that. I enjoy when people poke the tiger that ESPN has become.
John, I will say this. I was just about to say you enjoy Skip Bayless.
No.
So I was going to say,
no. There
is one thing that is a flaw with you, John. Now, Skip Bayless is, he really is one of the great, in my opinion, con men and charlatans of all time, in that he has, he is really part of a show that has almost perfected this idea of disagreement as entertainment.
Yeah.
And I would sort of claim that it's an absolute falsehood, and that you'll see Bayless, almost like a WWE wrestling character, basically take viewpoints and say things merely only to draw attention to himself as well as to draw attention to the show. I mean, at a certain point, it defies logic when a human being sort of says something to the effect of, you know, I'd rather take Tim Tebow over Tom Brady, or LeBron James doesn't have the clutch gene, whatever that nonsense kind of term is.
Yeah.
But I got to give Bayless credit. He's making over $1 million at ESPN. The show's ratings for the morning are really good. About 400,000 people watch that show every day. So I would imagine the last laugh is on him, but it literally is like watching a monorail salesman every morning try to sell people on a monorail. It's unbelievable.
And you, I think, and I maybe share the same opinion on ESPN in general. Over the years, recent years in particular, it's pretty transparent attempt in many instances by ESPN to just create points of controversy, whether it's Tim Tebow or Michael Sam or Ron Jaworski saying right. in the run-up to the draft about Johnny Manziel. They'll take that and get hours and hours of programming out of something that one of their people said. It's almost insanity.
It is insanity. And what would be more honest and transparent is to say, you know what? We are intentionally using one of our analysts to create news, as opposed to the opposite when they say we don't manufacture news and we don't manufacture controversy, because it's just... The fact is, it's just simply not true. The Jaworski example is the perfect example. Jaworski comes on and says that Colin Kaepernick, in his opinion, he could be the best quarterback of all time, or he's the best quarterback in the NFL. So then ESPN.com takes what Jaworski says on the air, turns that into a story, and then ESPN2 and ESPN Radio spend all day debating whether that is a true fact or not. Then you have other, you know, because ESPN dictates the conversation in this country, then you have other sports talk radio stations around the country, you have other bloggers weighing in on this topic, and that essentially is how ESPN, from one analyst, has created the news. The only thing you kind of hope, and you really hold your hat, and you hope it's honest, is you hope someone like Jaworski is telling the truth. Knowing Ron, I believe he believes that. That's the difference with Bayless. I don't believe for a second that Bayless believes 50% of the things he says. I think he's just smart enough to know that the more outlandish I can be, the more attention I'll get.
What are we going to do about this, Rich, from a sports media perspective? I worry about that sometimes.
What we're going to do is watch ESPN continue to cash $6 billion checks, John. we're not honestly doing anything about it. You know, the fact is, that network has a dominance over every other sports network, and it's not going to change. I mean, the business model itself is genius in that not only do they get more $5 and a little bit more than $5, whatever it is these days, $5.55 or something like that, per subscriber for everyone who gets ESPN on cable, but they also have an advertising model. So they also get money from the advertisers who advertise on ESPN. Mm-hmm. So it's called a dual revenue stream. It's an incredible business model. So I hate to say it, they're essentially a monopoly in sports, even though Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports Network, et cetera, exists. So the only way that really can change is if ESPN, which does, by the way, I would say a lot of great work on a daily basis, mm-hmm. is if, I always say, if the good angels of ESPN on any given day beat the bad angels, it's a good day. But sometimes it's the nonsense factory which, you know, becomes the dominant storyline of the day, and that's when you see, like, you know, ESPN.com, every ESPN station, ESPN radio, you know, do these absurd debates like, you know, is LeBron James a clutch player? Blah, you know, is LeBron James tough? I mean, it's the kind of stuff that any sports fan with average sort of intelligence is like, yeah, LeBron James has been a clutch player. LeBron James is tough. But, you know, we kind of live in an argument culture, and a lot of times ESPN takes advantage of that.
We're on the line with Rick Deitch, Rich Deitch. He is a writer-reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. And the real reason we wanted to get you on the show tonight, Rich, was to talk about your column, which is up on Peter King's MMQB. Television, better than the real thing and getting more so every day. Television in the NFL. In many respects, many people believe it is better than the real thing, and the league's worried about that, aren't they?
They are, and they should be, because you know, the fact is, John, the home experience now with HD, with NFL, things like NFL Red Zone, with Fantasy Stat, you know, think about the Red Zone channel. The Red Zone channel is essentially geared towards your fantasy football team, where you can basically watch that and in real time essentially know how you are doing every week in fantasy football, you know, presuming obviously you have your computer or your laptop or tablet there tabulating your scores. But it's the real problem the NFL has is, and have in doing this story for Peter King's site, and talking to a lot of fans, and even there's really nothing the NFL can do to kind of duplicate the comfort factor of watching the NFL in your own home. So even if you really love the idea of being at a stadium, you generally speaking have to travel to the stadium. You don't have the same amenities in the stadium, whether it's food, whether it's generally Wi-Fi that you would have at your home. In certain cities, obviously like Buffalo, when it gets later in the year, you have to deal with the elements. And Bills fans are amazing, but, you know, having been at some games at the old Rich Stadium, which were like negative 10 degrees. It's not an easy place to be in November and December. So there are so many things that, the NFL in-game experience is a negative compared to the NFL home experience, that the league is thinking about this. The league is worried, but the league is also at a bit of a has a bit of a problem here, John, because the fact is what drives the NFL is the money that they get from these networks. Whatever it is these days, $6 billion basically in fees from the networks. It may be, some analysts would project $17 million 10 years from now. So they need television, and they need television to put on an incredible product, an incredibly great HD product, which television is doing. But at the same time, that product, I think, has become so great that it does eliminate some of the reason to go to the game, unless you really are just, you know, an ultimate diehard who just wants to be in the stadium. I mean, John, I know you've done Bills games for a long time. I might even argue at this point, maybe people are actually attending the games almost for the tailgating experience,
yeah,
more than the in-game experience. Because to be quite blunt, having covered a million NFL games, the television experience is like 500 times better just from a visual purpose than if you're in the stadium where you can't see everything.
Right. A quote that you got from a Pittsburgh area NFL fan, a guy named Puck. I forget his first name.
Right, yep.
Yeah, Michael Puck, who says, "You could not pay me to go to the games." That just jumps off the page at you.
It does. And the one thing with Michael Puck, and I would imagine your listeners can appreciate this and identify with this as well, is Michael Puck has two little kids. And so I think once you become a parent and once you have kids, it becomes even that much harder to take your kids to the game. One, it's extra tickets. Two, obviously, you got to feed them. And there are some places where it's, you know, it could get a little rough for little kids depending on what the environment is. So, you know, Michael Puck, I think, just sort of expressed the opinion that probably a lot of, like, you know, 30-something guys have. It's like it's just too much of a hassle to head out and go to the game when literally I have everything that I could ever possibly need in the comfort of my own home.
And the TV experience, as good as it is now and as attractive as it is now to NFL fans sitting at home, it's going to get better. In fact, you kind of project out over the next 10 years. You say that the picture itself will probably be sharper, better in the years ahead?
Yeah, in talking to like the tech side people of television networks, they would predict that whatever you think HD is now, the screen will get four times better or possibly even eight times better over the next 10 years. That technology is coming. It's pretty much, I think, four times, or 4K basically they call it, is already out there. You're seeing that at some of like the electronic shows, which had the most advanced technology. So viewers will be able to probably buy those kind of TVs, I would think, in the next 1 to 4 years. So think about that. Think about how good HD technology is now, and then magnify that by you'll be able to see the screen four times better. Some of these other TV experts talk to a producer. The guy actually does Sunday Night Football, most popular show on television. He believes they're going to get to a point where cameras are going to be so good and so many cameras will be placed on the field that you will be able to digitally remove people from a replay where, let's say, for instance, a quarterback breaks the plane of the goal line. You can't sort of see it perfectly because there's defenders there. He believes you'll be able to digitally remove those defenders so the people at home will be able to clearly see whether the quarterback crossed the line or not. And then there are other people, and I think they're totally right about this too. You as a viewer at home, you may be able to actually basically control every camera you want. So you'll have choice of 100 cameras, let's say, from your laptop, and you'll be able to watch the game from any angle, whether it's, let's say, the top of the stadium to linebacker cam. So think about that. You could literally, if you want, I would guess 10 years from now, you'll be able to watch the game from the quarterback's viewpoint. A quarterback has a little, like, pencil camera in his helmet or something like that, and you could watch the entire game from the quarterback's viewpoint. So I think all this, I shouldn't say all of this, but I think a lot of this kind of stuff is coming in the next decade.
You know, wasn't it CBS or one of the broadcasters for the NCAA basketball tournament this year experimented with kind of a home team concept when
Correct.
It came to announcers? Do you see that in the future for NFL TV?
I absolutely do. The only tricky thing there, I think, will be that the networks have their contract, and it's, the NFL is national as opposed to local. So you do wonder if whether it's CBS, whether it's NBC, whether it's Fox, et cetera, would allow that. What I do think will happen, though, is I think you'll see something that the ESPN did for the MegaCast, where they had the all-22 cameras, which is like the cameras that the coaches use to see every player on an NFL field. And I think you would be able to get that broadcast where you have ex-coaches basically watching the game from the all-22 camera, and if you're watching that telecast, they're basically giving you like a coach's X's and O's seminar as opposed to like the traditional game broadcast. So that will be something for like the really hardcore X's and O's football junkies who want to watch a game with coaches as opposed to the traditional broadcast. That's something I definitely think is going
to
come.
You talked to Fred Gaudelli, the producer for NBC Sunday Night Football. He talked about, in the future, even practices being broadcast. We do a lot of that on our website right now, BuffaloBills.com, as far as showing practice highlights. I could see people would watch that. People would watch Buffalo Bills practices every day.
If the Bills made the full practice available, now obviously the downside, I guess, for the Bills would be those tapes are going to get around to opposing teams. But there is no doubt in my mind, if there was, let's say, I'm just making this up, there's a subscription where you as a Bills fan, you have to pay, let's say, $100 a year, and you get every practice, either you can watch that live or you can watch a tape of that later that night because you subscribe to this service. I believe that would be incredibly successful for almost every NFL team, because that's the kind of stuff that fans, generally speaking, never get to see. So if you're a diehard fan of a team, and you could, even if it was, I would almost say, even if you did that once a week, where once a week you basically could watch the hour practice, I think NFL teams would absolutely make revenue on that. The question would be there, John, to me, would be like competitive advantage. Is it worth the revenue that you'll make as a league to take away the competitive advantage? Because I would think a lot of coaches, if they know the practice is available and being taped, my guess is they probably would. It'd be one of those fake practices that we often see, like at the Final Four.
Hey, Rich, when we started doing this show almost two years ago now, people would ask me, what are you going to talk about 365 days a year, 52 weeks a year? We got no problem with that. And the question comes up, where does it end? I mean, it's almost like the Mark Cuban question, How much more saturation can the NFL have? What do you think?
I don't think we've hit the apex, because I think the sport is basically, it's sort of, this is not to make religion sound trite, but it is really one of the closest things to religion that we have in this country. It's really a perfect kind of television media sport. It's once a week, so every game is almost like a playoff game. It's not like the baseball season where it's 162 games. I mean, it's a realistic 16-game season. So, the games sort of feel like they're important. And, there have still been days of the week which they can take advantage of. You know, Thursday Night Football has existed now, I want to say, for like 8 years, but it's been on the NFL Network, essentially. It used to be on Turner TNT way back in the day.
Right.
But essentially, if you didn't get the NFL Network, you were shut out from the NFL on Thursday night. This year, that totally changes. The games will now be on CBS. My sense is that those games will go up from 8 million to like 16 million. So when you talk about where does it end, this year is a perfect example. The NFL is going to get its product to 8 million more people every Thursday because of one little tweak. You know, you want to even think about some other tweaks? They could, if they really want to. They have enough programming to make the draft 4 or 5 days,
as
opposed to a 3-day draft, because the ratings have proved that people want them. So, maybe one day there'll be a saturation point, but every metric says the NFL interest still is going up.
It's fascinating to watch. Rich, we thank you very much for coming on the show tonight to talk with us about it. Great work on the Media Circus column, and I really did enjoy this MMQB column today, too, as well. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
That is Rich Deitch. He is a writer-reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com, and on Peter King's MMQB column today, he writes, television, better than the real thing and getting more so every year. Kind of a look ahead at what to expect from the NFL and NFL coverage on television, network television, and satellite TV as well. With a couple of anecdotal stories about a couple of amazing fans, maybe they're out there in our audience. I mentioned Michael Puck from the North Hills area of Pittsburgh, who is a Bengals fan, who, as his quote said, he would never think of going to a game. You could not pay me to go to games. He's got 2 75-inch TVs mounted side-by-side on the wall of his basement, subscription to DirecTV Sunday Ticket. And another fan that Rich talked to, Gordy Brown from Florida, who's got a 75-inch HD TV that he watches. He's got a 50-inch HD TV right next to it, tuned to the Red Zone channel, so he can keep an eye on his fantasy football. And then he's got a 46-inch HD TV, which he tunes to the best NFL game on TV every Sunday, a fourth 32-inch HD TV, and a fifth TV in case people who are at his house are rooting for a particular team. And, of course, he watches, he pays attention to the NFL on his tablet, too, his iPad.
It's a sports bar.
He's got a sports bar in his house, this guy. And, oh, by the way, he's got a projection screen poolside. He lives in Florida, so he can sit in the pool and watch NFL football as well.
Do you have his address? Better make friends with this guy, huh?
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
There are people like this, and there are probably people like this in Buffalo who have maybe not as elaborate setups, but the question has fascinated me for the last couple of years since we've been doing this show. Where is the, you know, where does it end? When do we reach the end of the line as far as interest in the NFL? As you heard Rich say, not likely that it's going to be very soon anyway. I would invite you to take a look at this column, Television Better Than the Real Thing, Getting More So Every Year. It's on Peter King's excellent website, mmqb.si.com. Rich Deitch, who covered the Bills for a while, not too long ago.